One. I am avoiding legal snags by telling you that you are being recorded. Good morning, Hymenosius.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good morning. I collect all my legal snags and do in a little. I have a little pouch. I just put them all in there together.
Oh, your snag pouch? How nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. You know, my L snag pouch. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. We are. I'm stressed out thinking about our vineyard day we have coming up, which we sold out of in 7 minutes. Which brings me to our first topic, which is Apple Pay. And one of the things I thought was super interesting, so we have a vineyard day every year at the Casing Room, really out in the vineyard. We Willy Wonka, we let people come out to the vineyard, we show them around, feed them breakfast, go for a long walk, and then taste a bunch of wines nobody ever gets to taste. And it turns into a thing. It's pretty cool. Last year we had a hot air balloon, but that took too much time, so we're not doing that. We're streamlining this year. But back to the lecture at hand. I want to talk about Apple Pay, because one of the things that was super interesting is our website is Apple Pay. You can use Apple Pay to pay. And
this is a Squarespace site, right?
Correct. And we said, hey, things are going on sale at 6 o'clock a.m., be ready to buy out. Usually it, you know, it takes about 4 hours. And this year, I got a text from someone that said, hey, something's wrong with your site. I can't buy. And I immediately was sitting at my desk. I looked online and we sold out. And I said, no way. And truthfully, it was 5 minutes, not seven. But the very interesting thing that happened was, when people had it all queued up, ready to go on their phones, and then hit pay, and then use Apple Pay to pay, they had a seamless experience that made the ticket sale almost instantaneous. Where if anybody else had to put in their credit card, they lost that time and i.e. lost out on buying their ticket. So
yeah.
I don't know how much of a topic that is, other than it was like proof positive of something that you and I have been looking at or watching for a
while. It's two things, right? Like, I don't know how valuable it is. It's interesting in this regard. It takes that gap between enthusiasm and purchase, and it makes it much shorter, right? It makes it a slide. It's just like, I want that thing, and I look at it. I tap a button, I put my thumb on it, and I have it, right?
It is frictionless.
Well, it's less friction. It's less friction. But
right. You
would have sold out either way.
Yeah, but not so in that's 7 minutes.
Does it matter? Does it matter to you whether you sell out in 1 hour or in 7 minutes?
Well, I think the interesting part to it...
You don't get any more money.
No.
You don't get any more tickets sold. I mean, I'm not saying it's not interesting, but I work kind of in and around that same idea. And so what I wonder is, what is the real value? Like, obviously we're like starry eyed and it's like, that's so cool. And it made it so easy. Mm-hmm. And so what did it do? It reduced friction on the people who wanted it. They had a delightful
instant gratification.
They had an instant gratification. It made them feel good about their iPhone 10. It made them feel good that Sarlos & Sons is a modern company that enabled them to purchase in that way.
But I don't even think – I'm not even talking from the consumer standpoint. I'm talking about –
Right. So that's what they felt.
Yeah.
That's correct. What they felt. You felt delight. You got a high score moment. You got a, you know – like sold out in a record amount of time, feeling like that people want it so bad that it flew off the shelf. That feels good for you as the producer and the maker.
Right.
People want the thing that I'm providing to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the other group of people is the people who are using their regular credit card
and they
went to go buy it and they're like, oh, where's my wallet? And they go get their card and they start tapping it in and it's sold out by the time they submit it. Or there's just someone who comes along 30 minutes later and sees it and it's already sold out. And they feel like bummed out because they missed it. But they were going to be bummed out because they missed it regardless. So I feel like it's all of those things are true, but I'm trying, but what I'm looking for, or the piece that I'm trying to figure out, is it's not actually after that hour. If you cut that hour of time out, you would have been sold out even with regular credit cards.
Totally.
I don't know. It's a weird thing. I'm a fan of it. I'm not a fan of it, but I'm trying to figure out, like, what's the next step? Like, where's the value? Cause what's happening is, like, Google Pay, Samsung Pay, Android Pay, I think it's like Google Wallet now, Apple Pay. Like, they're all getting to this place where they're, like, sucking in these credit card numbers and they're holding them for you. They've got them ready for you. They've got your shipping information ready for you. And they're saying, like, we'll give you a different way to verify that you want the thing, right? Like, the big bubble, and I'm almost done with my rant. The big bubble is this. You used to use the credit card number and the shipping address and all that stuff was to prove that it was you. It was a thing that was hard enough that people couldn't necessarily just look over your shoulder as you pay and memorize your 16 numbers, or they wouldn't know all your different addresses. Like, those were the security measures. Now, in this digital age, we're like, screw all that. We're going to store all that stuff. And when you say you want it, all you have to do is say a magic word. And you can use your thumbprint to say that magic word, or you can look at your phone, or you could do something else, right? And once you do that, we will unlock all of this stored information for you. And that's really interesting, but I'm wondering, like, what's the next step? Like, how can we use this to make you more money? Or how can we use this, like, to make it cheaper for the people who are buying the thing? Like, where's the thing that actually unlocks some value
for you as the seller? This is my next step to that. If there was a algorithmic aspect to that purchase, right? Clearly, clearly my price was too low because we sold out too quickly. And what is super interesting about it, like, we see, you know, like, pro tip for anybody, if you're going to be buying a ticket, airplane ticket, you know, always turn privacy on when you go look at tickets. Because one of the things that happens algorithmically is that
the second time you look at it, it's more expensive.
Exactly right. And they are using that information to see how you are trying to game them, but also what is the interest in that flight on that day at that time. So if you go look at it 50 times, it'll inflate the price, you know, by some sort of math between how many people looked at it, how many people actually bought, and how many seats are left available. One of the things that I thought was interesting is what would have my ticket price been if algorithmically we let it go and it defines my price based upon how many people are going there, how fast people are buying, and how much I actually have to sell. Because I think it would have been amazing if I had an infinite amount of tickets to be able to sell. Then it doesn't matter if it's 7 minutes or an hour or 10 hours or 50 hours. Or, like, you know, iPhones, there's 50 of them being sold every second. It would have been just super interesting to me to see that in kind of a deeper dive. I really don't have anything beyond, hey, we sold out. Great. That's awesome.
But, can't you look at your Stripe back end or something and see the timestamps on when those transactions came through?
I saw where when they all came through. And
because your phone started, like, Scrooge McDuck jumping around in your
big
pocket.
Big time. And actually, so I was sitting on my computer thing, looking at it, right?
This would be the interesting thing, though, right? Like, do you want to optimize for – like, you could do that. You could algorithmically – raise the price based on, like, a supply and demand, and as the supply goes down, the price goes up. But then you have people who are paying $200 to be there and people who are paying $50 to be there.
Totally.
And I feel like you'd be in a different place. Like, would you feel good about that?
Well, here's the thing.
Do you care? Would they care? Would they feel bad?
Well, here's the thing. What I thought would be super interesting, and I think, you know, if this was – I was just looking at, you know, how much – what we did 4 years ago when we did this. The interesting part to me would be if there was a way that you could say, look at your customer's order history. Look how good a customer they are. You know, cue them appropriately, and they get this price. Because they're a great customer, you want to keep them happy. You know, or how much money well, does
what,
a new customer
what if you did this?
Versus an old customer? Because right now I'm what doing if you that did analog. This?
What if you did this?
Mm-hmm.
This is just a thought experiment. I don't know, but it would be interesting.
Experiment after this.
It would be interesting if you did this, if you said tickets are $100, right? Because they're $50 this year.
$75 if you're not part of our family, and then $50 if you are, which is pretty low.
And 50. Okay. So those are, I mean, to me, that's like, that's cheap. That's good.
We want people to have a good time and not have price be a issue.
Right. And I think that's, you know, that's a whole other conversation we could have about, like, how do you pin this to a Disneyland experience or any of the other places we think kind of have like a high touch thing, right? But
sure.
What if you did something, let's say it was $100.
Mm-hmm.
But wouldn't it be interesting if you had a way to say any of your confirmation numbers from the last 12 months, you can apply them as a coupon code and each one will take $10 off the price. So that that would do kind of exactly what you're talking about. Or you could even take the cap off, right? You could say any of your confirmation numbers from any time would take $10 off. So if you've bought from us 10 times,
but that makes it free. Yeah, I totally get that. But also your customer would have to do a lot of digging and work.
They would. Yeah. I mean, you would do something up front, right? You would announce it, like when you start talking about Vineyard Day, you would say that in your first post that's 30 days out, like, hey, we're going to do something different this year. Make sure you know X, Y, and Z.
Sure.
And maybe you can apply it after the fact or whatever so that you don't end up like, I couldn't buy it because it sold out while I was trying to rifle my stuff. But it's an interesting thing to look at how you could reward those customers in a different way. But yeah, I like it. I'm glad it sold out. I'm going to be out of town. I haven't been to one yet.
You couldn't come anyway. We don't have anywhere for anybody to sit.
That's all right. I know where you'd be. I'd just show up.
I know. Totally. Please don't tell people to do that. Yeah, totally. I'm with the Keith.
I'm with the DJ. Totally. I'd show up with a box of records, and I'd just be like, I'm with the DJ. What?
Okay. I have topic number two in experiment time.
But no, congratulations. I'm glad to hear it sold out. I look forward to getting the full report and seeing the wrap-up video. And I'm sorry to hear there is no hot air balloon this year.
No, it took too long. It took too long. And it took focus away from like what we were really there to do.
You know? Yeah, I thought you at first when you said, unfortunately, there'll be no hot air balloon, I thought you were going to say there was an incident last year or something, but it just took too long.
It did. Yeah. I mean, it was
We're
fun,
still waiting
it
for
like
it to come down.
Yeah, they will be missed. They will be missed. Okay, so, thought experiment number two. Thought experiment number two. A person who will remain nameless that we both know reached out to me yesterday. And brought up a idea that I kind of wanted to touch on. And the idea is about, like, unifying terms. And what I mean by a unifying term is, you know, the Fighting Irish have, you know, play like a champion today, and when everybody leaves, they hit it. You know, the Apollo, you know, everybody comes out and they rub their hands on the stump, right? There's, you know, countless
USC when you cross the street to go watch the football games, you kick the light post.
Perfect. Okay, you are on it. You are absolutely.
You know about that?
Yep, I knew about that.
Yeah.
There's tons and tons of these truthful touchstones that you do, right? Mm-hmm. So my question to you, and because you are a big thinker, and this is a weird topic, and I know it's a weird topic. How do you go about creating a touchstone? How do you go about creating something that becomes. And truthfully, like if you say like SC, right, everybody just started, someone was the first person to kick the light post, right?
Yeah.
And then everybody started doing for someone.
Yeah.
But what are things like that you have seen, number one?
You want to know another example of it?
Yeah,
totally. That you're familiar with? It's starting the wave. But it's
totally.
But it's not. It's starting the wave. Like, that's a small version of it, because it's got to be weird and artificial to start with, right? It's got to be clunky and corny and all this other stuff. It's not until like the second generation of participants come that it's actually that thing, right? Because when you start something, like when you inherit it, when you come into a community and they're like, this is what we do, or they don't even say it. You know, yeah. I'm just a 17-year-old freshman going to a football game, and I hear it as I approach. I hear this clunk, 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 clunk. And as I get closer, I see, like, people are kicking these light posts, and it's like everybody's doing
it. In your lexicon. You don't know if they've been doing it for 10 minutes or 50 years.
Nope, you don't, but it's happening. It's a happening, right? You know, and you're indoctrinated into it in that moment without anything vocal or being expressed. You know, it just is. And so maybe you can do it, but I think for whomever that first person is, whoever decides to do it, they're making a decision that's different from everybody else. And so it's weird. Like, you could put something above the door and people could all touch it as they walk through, but it's like, it's a different thing for you than for the people who start touching it. Right. And I think there are those people who do the wave, who start the wave, who feel that need, but even that's like a microcosm of it. But truly the first person who started the first wave is the one who started that. People are already like just referencing a thing that's kind of in the ether and that people are already aware of. So I don't know. It's a weird thing. Why are you trying to create touchstones, or are you just thinking about, or what's up?
Well, part of that conversation kind of came, you know, through our mutual friend. Right. And one of the things that is important to do with any, let's say, new company, right.
Mm-hmm.
New company, you have to develop an ethos or a
culture,
Something. Yes, exactly. Right. Yeah. And you and I, and many people probably who listen to this, but also people who are tied into, hey, this is my team. This is the jersey I always wear on game.
Yeah.
Right. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
You know, I can tell you, like, I had my own ones when I was like in high school and played football. It's like I would tie my shoes like after the coin toss. Right. That was like a thing. I don't know. It's a ritual. Right.
Yeah. A superstition as well. Yeah. A little bit.
Yeah. Right. My brother would jump, never touch the lines when he was running off the mound to the dugout after an inning. He'd always like jump over them, like prance over them. Right. but going more into the play like a champion today, or kicking the light posts, or, you know, the Apollo, stump or whatever, right? How do you as a, let's talk about it as a company first. How do you as a company capitalize on something that maybe at its best, it just happens, you see it happen, and then you capitalize on it, right? I think that's the best possible version of it. But when you're, let's say, an owner of a business and you're trying to, like Apple did a great job with Think Different, right? Think Different was a marketing scheme, but it was also the ethos of Steve Jobs that would be from a top down. This is why you're here, and this is why you want to work here, because we want you to think different. We want you to be outside the box, and we want you to do things that are unique and special, and the weirder it is, the more we're going to like it. But if you have a company, how do you create something like that? If you are the owner of the Dodgers, right, or a sports team, how do you start something that you are trying to unify the team and then share that unification of the team with the fans?
The good thing about teams is that they're already pseudo religious institutions. They're pseudo political or governmental institutions, right?
They have sacrament and they have superstition baked in. Yes.
Yeah, they are gangs. They are smaller fiefdoms and communities that are necessarily set in opposition against other ones, right? So you're already in the spirit of, like, these are our colors. This is our motto. This is our mascot. This is what we're going to do. This is your, you know, this is your quarterback whom you protect at all costs. This is your pitcher who, you know, you protect. You know, all of these things kind of are already helping set you in this direction. Mm-hmm. There's also, you know, the superstition, like you said, that you and your brother developed all on your very own, because it's about competition and performance and everything else. And you probably forgot to tie your shoelaces one day and you had a good game. And you're like, I'm going to do that again.
Exactly. You know? I would, like, when I went to Sizzler before games, I would have soup and not salad, because the best game I ever had, I had soup.
Right, right. And your brother saw old man Carruthers, like, putting the lines down on the field one day, and he realized that that old man works very hard. And he's like, you know what? I shouldn't mess up his lines. Totally. And then he had a good game, and then he never stepped on that line again, you know.
Right, step on a crack
and match to break your mom's back.
No, you know, do you manufacture that by giving, like, the towels, right? Do you put towels on everybody's chair so that they will instinctively pick them up and start spinning them around? Is that how you manufacture it? Is that how you create it? Or do you sit there and wait for something to happen and go, that's it?
Yeah, I guess you just manufacture it.
I mean, at least in
all of these things that we're talking about, like, I even think about, like, the Rally Monkey, or, like, when it was, when the big thing was.
Right. Rally Monkey was actually pretty rad.
The big thing for a little while was those like, inflatable bop-em sticks that, like.
You
know, the ones that, like, two inflatable things and people would hit them together.
And they started making a lot of noise. Yeah, it was a good
company. All of those are marketing decisions. You know, there's just a marketer that was like, those things cost how much? 3 cents each? Okay, let's give a pair on each seat. You know, and it just, people instinctively picked them up and began to do the thing with them. Now, I don't think those are as strong as, like, the first things that you mentioned, which become, like, cultural and, you know, years and generational long things. But maybe it doesn't matter. You know, I think that the more people you have involved, the more you might have something quirky happen that just happens. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's just about, like, setting up the environment and having things around and having enough random people that something happens. You know, it's kind of like, if one person does it, it's whatever. If a second person does it, it's something. If a third person does it, it becomes a trend only when it's either happened on multiple occasions or multiple people pick it up. Kind of like I think it depends why you want to make it happen and what it's kind of doing. But I think, because I'm even thinking about, like, it would be different, but you could, if you put any motto up significantly on the wall, that would start to be a thing, because your people, either customers or employees, would see it on a regular basis and they would start to incorporate, like, oh, that's, you know, either that's what this place is about, right? And they would start to feel that. But, like, when you start talking about the actual touchstones are different and weird, because like, the touch is the affirmation. Is that what's going on? Like, you're literally right, you know, rubbing the wood as you walk out at the Apollo, or other places where you literally have a touchstone, a thing that is smoothed by oil and fingerprints and age of time, because people feel like something, they're part of something bigger by doing that, and or that they're getting some luck by doing it. You know, it's an odd thing.
I think you brought up two points that I think are super interesting. One is that when you have things that, like, if it's a business more than walking to an SC game, You know what I mean?
Just by
honestly putting it up on the wall, you're going to, you know, if you just put sink or whatever on the wall, you know, then all of a sudden IBM jumps to my mind, but it's also something they put on everything until people were like, oh, ThinkPad, think, you know, that was like their mantra, right? So there's a certain amount of defining your mantra, I guess, as a company, but like, you know, let's bring up a total hypothetical, right? This is where we go into the total hypothetical. That's not a hypothetical. But if you were if you were in charge of running, say, a basketball team, right? The interesting part of that is you brought up a few things. One, you have that moment when they are introducing players that you can now project on the floor whatever you want. And you could start something there that would be the phrase, the rally cry of everybody that's in that arena. You could even have recorded of a chant that starts, that you start like fading in, that gets everybody else sitting there going, oh my God, like you brought up the wave, right? Every single person goes, oh my gosh, why we're chanting this. Okay, this is what, then let's just start chanting, because then you're in mob mentality, right?
Right.
You're putting it on the floor. You are doing that previous to introducing a team. So everybody, including the mass of people that you are creating it for, either, you know, hypothetically, or someone's got to kick it first, if you will. And by kicking it first, you start the chant over the loudspeaker with everybody, and then everybody kind of comes in, and then pretty soon everybody just does it because everybody's always done it, right? The interesting part is coming up with, like, okay, what is that chant? What is that unification that we want to spread to everyone?
Well, that's the interesting thing, right? Like, do you do a new one, or do you do one that's already exists, or do you do one that's a variation of one that already exists? Because if I start, you know, if I just start clapping slow.
No, totally.
You know, it's like, oh, it's a slow clap, you know, but, or if it's, if you're at UCLA and you start clapping, people be like, oh, it's the eight clap, starting, totally. You know. There's different things, or, you know, it's like, there's different things that people will catch up on, but like, if you're at a high school game and you start like stomping your feet in the bleachers, like it will turn into a natural drum roll. People will catch the rhythm that you started. It'll start to get a little faster, and then it'll be like, you know, there's certain ones, there's certain fuses you can light. It's kind of like the wave that already exists across sportsdom, or at least in the U.S. You know, there's like stadium and coliseum culture that kind of exists.
You stand on third down. You know, stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Without even really knowing that, you really do get a lot of that through, like, cheerleaders, you know? That's kind of the whole point of what a cheerleader does.
That's what cheerleaders are. There you have it. You answered our question. The answer to everything we just said is cheerleaders. As far as, like, they're the ones that usually will be the instigators, the instructors, the directors of the community chant, the community ruckus that's going on. But I think that's different from at least what I was initially thinking. You know, sports is a different place than everywhere else. Or being in the sporting arena is different. Like, I don't think cheerleaders started kicking the thing at USC. Cheerleaders didn't start the Fighting Irish tapping the ceiling. That was the players. You know, that was the fans doing their thing.
Does it mean more when the players do it first, and then that bleeds out into the?
It means something to them. I think their coach can give them something. You know, because the coach is there before they're there in some respects or whatever, right? Or like, if you're thinking high school or collegiate, you come in as a freshman, sophomore, and there's juniors and seniors, and they have a thing. You know, you come in to an existing body. And so there is that idea, you know, you start getting into just like marketing, and how do you change the culture, and how do you push something a certain way? Do you seed it
you know, if you want it to be some sort of chant, do you put 30 people who know what to do when around the stadium? And then people kind of just look up and they realize, oh, it's not just the guy next to me. It's kind of over there. And it's over there as well. And they learn it and they start doing it. I don't know. It depends. Like, what's
and then you have to have a good game, right? I mean, you kind of have to have a good game. Because when the rally monkey is there, the rally monkey is because it worked and got him to the playoffs. And, oh, my gosh, there he is. You know, here we are. We're so stoked. And this has worked in the past. And we had a great rally, and now it wins, you know?
Yeah.
That's an interesting that's an interesting thought, because right now what we're really getting into is, like, again, it's the same, to bring it all back around, the people that were waiting to buy the ticket to Vineyard Day were excited, they were waiting, and they bought, right?
Yeah.
The people that, when you're in the same way, you know, people have to be excited. They have to be waiting for it, and then they have to have tension build, and then there has to be a release of tension. It's like a joke, right? The whole point to a joke is you build tension, build tension, build tension, and the higher you build the tension, the funnier the punchline is, right?
Mm-hmm. And if you deliver.
If you deliver, but that's the key, right? And the same thing with the rally monkey, or the same thing with the standing on third down, and everybody – or on a kickoff where everybody goes, oh, you know, that kind of a thing. You're kind of building up to a crescendo. There is a moment where it happens, and then how do you finalize it?
Right. If you shank the kick, you've wasted my whoop that I did when I went,
everybody's going to go, oh.
Exactly. You know? And then they don't want to stand up the next time because it's like, come on, bro.
Totally. I think
to circle back to our beginning conversation, I think the way that you have to capitalize on that is not by raising your prices algorithmically. Mm-hmm. That's showing you that there's a demand, and I think you need to increase your supply.
Well, we need to do a weekend.
Well, you need to do a weekend, though. You need to do a Friday ticket, Saturday ticket, Sunday tickets.
I know. But dude, you know how drained, dude, I am so,
I know.
Number one, there's not like a huge staff. It's like me, my wife, and like family putting this thing on, right? And to do a second one, even like we have a sunset one planned right now. And we're going to have to reset everything and get it back on and then do it again, you know?
Yep. That's why I think you got to, well, we can talk about it in the next episode, my thoughts, but
double hit.
I think that you keep it to like one a day so that you have you can breathe in and out. You know, you do it, you reset, you rest, you do it, you reset, you rest, but maybe you can sell three times as many tickets and maybe there's a way for you to figure out if people are going to come out and visit you. If there's the demand for it, like how do you set up some other activities or things for them to do in the afternoons or what, you know, there might be something else that you can do to make it worth your time, but also to hit that sweet spot where it's like 1,000 people wanted to visit us and we were able to, you know, I'm just making up a number, and we were able to satisfy that 1,000,
you know,
or whatever it might be.
The thought that came into my head that, you know, the stress level has gone up because we're going to have another, let's say 150 people, right. Is don't build right now. I feel like I have a bigger wall, and what I need to do is build a bigger table. And it goes exactly with what you just said, and that's exactly what we're gonna do, because, you know, trying to make as many people happy as possible. Yes, it's gonna take more effort, maybe this, you know, all that kind of stuff. But truthfully, that's a big part of like who we are, is build a bigger table.
You've always been in that mode. So
yeah.
All right, I love you. I gotta go meet a lawyer, so I will talk to you soon. But I gotta jump.
Yeah.
All right, later. Bye, people.
Oh, good. Finalizing your recording. Sweet.